Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a little bit of it's been a few weeks, folks. I'll only pass this way quickly, but I've been gone for 3 weeks. I had two deaths in the family in the span of 7 days, and then last week I had a college visit because my daughter is about to leave for the rest of her life. So emotional times. I think I'll see her now and again. Relationship is good, folks. Don't worry about that. She's a great daughter to me, and I'm an even better dad. I'm just putting that out there. I'm great at it. I'm all over the place, guys, because it was a good show. And I'm psyched about next week. God, that does not happen very often with NXT. I'm psyched about next week. They really did some real promotion for the second week of Gold Rush. What is this show that is thinking forward that much? I mean, they're always doing stuff. But they really seemed like, this seemed like a go-home show that also was itself a kind of important show. Now, will Gold Rush feel important if it's a Night of Champions where no championships change hands? That's a pretty good question. And I think it could happen, but I got my pick for what might be the first championship to change hands, the only one next week. Anyway, I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Our main event, Seth Rollins visiting NXT. He was the first NXT champion, but you'd never know it because Vic and Booker would not say those words. That can't be accidental. It must be mandated that they're not talking about how these big stars were just champs on this secondary show, because they said that Seth crawled, like scratched his way to the top, but they never said, oh, and yes, the top means he became champion. They never said this. They had all, this ended with a brawl between two former NXT champions. Mm-hmm. They could have mentioned that, but they didn't. They didn't want to. I'm not going to die on that hill, but it seems like such a good way to promote the product we're watching.
One of whom was a two-time champion.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah. Yes. One of the few. So Seth Rollins.
Not to mention, they forgot to say he was one in a tournament as well.
Right. Defends against Braun Breaker. 17 minutes and 6 seconds. Seth Rollins was on offense for 17:02, I believe. Braun didn't get much here. Like, you would almost think so because he got a flurry at the end. But Rollins, this was kind of a sweep, this match. Not to say it was bad, but Braun didn't get much here, and his character kind of relies on getting something in these matches. But anyway, huge for the live crowd to be able to see this, to see Seth come back. Welcome home, they say, and of course, lots of chanting of his music and some cross promotion for Money in the Bank. Bruce Lee Hazelwood, who are you and what did you think of our main event?
Well, as Kelly said, I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. The main event, first thing, I noticed that the entrances started about 18 to the top of the hour, and usually the entrances start about 8 minutes to the top of the hour, so you knew that either there was going to be a long match or a fluky ending or some kind of shenanigans. We didn't get the fluky ending, but we did get the shenanigans afterwards to fill in the time for the overrun. So when the match ended, like, oh, hey, 3 minutes left in the overrun. I'm sure we're just going to end it right here, right? No. Of course, you have to fill it with Finn's attack on Seth. And to your point about the match and most of the offense being for Seth, I think that's a missed opportunity because you gave him the out with the busted ribs. And sure, the moments that Breaker had were very impactful, like the spear out of midair when Rollins went for the stomp. And I will say, the knee to counter the spear a little beforehand, Breaker spun way too early on. He showed a lot of light. I liked how Seth actually made it look like he was going for something and then got speared, unlike Breaker later in the match when he went to the top. And I think he's only done it a couple times, but I swear every time he's gone to the top, he's lost the match. Kind of Ric Flairish, right? So he just jumped and didn't do anything. At least make it look like you're doing a double axe handle if you're just going to get kicked in the face. So he does need to do a little more work on that. But the match itself was fine. I think the adjectives they used were based probably on how Seth wrestled the match, because one thing I really don't like in wrestling, and they reiterated it here in a good, it sort of to make it seem positive, even though I think it's dumb, is how so often baby faces will, quote, sacrifice their own body to inflict damage on their opponent. Like, honestly, outside, there was no reason for that frog splash to the announce table to happen in the match, but you got to get your spots in, I guess, and get the crowd to pop. And honestly, doing something like that, you should lose the match after that. But it also made Breaker's finishers look weak, because Seth kicked out of them pretty easily, both of them. And while Seth did take two stops to finish off Breaker, he didn't have Breaker kick out of the stop. He kicked out of the pedigree. So I think a mixed bag with how this match was put together. And I think the biggest detriment is absolutely nobody thought that Braun Breaker was going to win this match tonight. So kind of was just waiting for the ending to happen. And while the action in between was good, I just didn't really get too invested into this match because of, one, the outcome, and two, Breaker's involved in the match.
I think that you could fool some people if you weren't already promoting a main roster championship defense. But, I mean, hanging over the proceedings is Finn Balor. They're not going to run that match unless it's a championship match. It's not just a championship match, but it's deeply personal about championships, about belts. I don't think that helped, although that match obviously much more important than this one in the grand scheme of things. This was just a little ratings popper, they hope. I guess we will find out. Nate, who are you? And let's talk main event.
Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg, and I rate the NXT hits and misses. I do have one up on pwtorch.com for the first night of Gold Rush. So basically, I haven't actually watched wrestling in like almost 2 weeks at this point. I haven't been on the show, I haven't actually caught up on NXT. My life has been pretty hectic the past couple weeks, and I'm hoping it'll calm down pretty soon. So I came in tonight like really excited to sit down and watch wrestling, I'm not going to lie. So coming into this particular match, the main event, I feel like I was probably a little bit more fanboy and excited about this match than I would be on a typical night. That said, you know, seeing Seth Rollins back in the NXT arena, or back in NXT, I mean, obviously it wasn't the same building, but seeing him back in the, you know, an NXT ring, was kind of surreal. We haven't seen that since before the debut of The Shield. I don't think he might have come back down to NXT at one point or something like that, but I don't recall. But I mean, essentially we haven't really seen him in NXT since, you know, he left, to go form The Shield and become Seth freaking Rollins. So it was really cool to see that the crowd was absolutely, absolutely electric. I don't recall hearing them being so loud, so sustained for so long. You know, we've certainly had moments where they've popped and they've been super loud and everything like that. But that crowd in particular, you know, obviously it's where it's a taped show and the, you know, or not a taped show. The heck's the word I'm looking for, you know, a studio show in, you know, one particular spot every week. It's usually, you know, similar fans. And so, you know, we've talked quite a bit on the show about how, you know, they can be a bit of a weird audience, but I think they were absolutely unhinged to see, you know, to see Seth Rollins in the building, you know, one of the most popular wrestlers on the roster. This is one of those matches, and this is going to sound like a lofty comparison for a moment, but bear with me. This is one of those matches kind of almost similar to like Rock and Hogan, where if you turn the volume off, I don't know if it would be perceived as good as it was, would be with the volume on. I actually kind of want to go back and watch this match on mute. Because in the moment I'm sitting here, like I'm for it. I'm a wrestling fan, not necessarily a wrestling analyst. Right. And I'm watching the match. I'm excited. I'm there for it. They drew me in. And, you know, the more I kind of started thinking about it, you know, even before we went on air here tonight, you know, Bron Breakker, you're absolutely right. He did not get a lot of offense here on the mat in the match. I did feel like it was a bit of a, the fact that Seth Rollins is on the main roster, you know, obviously, I mean, I think that kind of gives him a little bit of an edge anyway. You know, it should basically make his, I guess his wrestling rating number, if you want to talk like video games anyway, probably higher than Bron Breakker. What's that?
Or Dave Meltzer.
Or Dave Meltzer. Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, the rating in a WWE 2K game or something like that. So, you know, just kind of using that metaphor, I'm sure Seth Rollins is higher than Bron Breakker. So you kind of expect him to get a little bit more offense and things like that. But as Bruce and Kelly both pointed out, he already had the out of the taped ribs. He had that, you know, big attack from Finn Balor last night, had the taped up ribs, had that injury. I really expected this to be a Bron Breakker show and see him really dominant here. And Seth Rollins kind of probably get, some of his offense in, get his spots off and then eventually squeak out a win. You know, as you said, nobody expected Bron Breakker to win this, especially with the Finn Balor match looming over Seth Rollins' head here coming up. So, but that's really what I thought this match was going to be. So, yes, I still think Bron Breakker gets a bit of a rub here from just getting in the ring and having a match with Seth Rollins. I believe this is the first time that a main roster title was, you know, up for grabs on NXT TV, at least a main title, you know, a heavyweight title, undisputed title, universal title, whatever you want to call it, whichever belt we're talking about at the moment. I think this is the first time that was, you know, actually contested on NXT TV. So it's a big moment. So I definitely think Bron gets a bit of a rub here, but at the same time, I really expected him to get some more offense here. You know, like Kelly said, his character revolves around getting his stuff in. And, you know, as it says on the back of his tights, which I'm not even sure what the heck it means, meaner than evil. He's supposed to be meaner than evil. And that didn't necessarily come across here tonight. So I gave this a major hit in the hits and misses, I think this will probably be remembered as a, as one of those big moments and big matches in NXT. We'll probably wind up seeing in some video packages here and there, things like that, where, you know, this was a main roster star putting his title on the line in NXT. At the same time, I don't necessarily know if going back and rewatching this, especially, you know, like I said, turning the crowd down or turning the volume down so you can't necessarily hear the crowd reactions, I don't know if it would necessarily be perceived as good, as it was, at the end of the match here tonight. I still enjoyed it. I still think it was a great match, for what it was. Definitely not where I expected it to go in terms of, you know, the match itself. Like I said, I expected Bron to get a little bit or a lot more offense in here, especially with the taped up ribs from Rollins. That kind of seemed like some big foreshadowing for that coming into the match. But overall, I'm okay with it. As Kelly pointed out at the top of the show, they did a lot of promotion for Gold Rush Night 2. They did a lot of promotion for various other things throughout within the company, within NXT and out of NXT. And I feel like this match kind of did something, it kind of also played into that. We did have the Finn Balor attack after the match, basically continuing the story from Monday Night Raw. I kind of like that because not just that particular attack, but we also now have so many main roster superstars coming into NXT. Dana Brooke, for example, and, you know, Mustafa Ali, Baron Corbin, Los Lotharios, where it's almost like they're almost kind of trying to weave NXT into more of like a main roster story, kind of try to make it, I guess, for lack of a better term, a third brand again. And that's, again, a lofty assumption here. That's kind of, for lack of a better term right now. But it almost seems like they're trying to make NXT feel a little bit more relevant again by weaving it into some of these storylines. At least that was my perception coming out of tonight's show.
And I've been thinking that even with just the appearances by the main roster people, some of it is just tire kicking. Like, what do you do with Dana Brooke when you don't want to fire her, but you have literally nothing for her? I guess this.
You make her pull a weird stretcher job.
Yeah, that was real strange.
And then the other thing is they really should have been doing more of this to begin with NXT. Not so much in terms of so many main roster folk coming down to NXT, but making sure that there's cohesion between people on NXT and then if whoever comes down and up, that there's more of that cohesion. And so I think we're starting to start seeing more of that as we see, kind of seeing it now with people like Alba Fire and Isla Dawn moving up. We're seeing it with other folks that have gone up, you know, Waller, keeping the Waller, the Grayson Waller effect and everything like that. So he's still making changes, but I guess without Vince being so micromanaging, it's a little easier for Trips and Sean to, I don't know, I guess make everything flow a little better than it had in the past when we would get Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano feuding and then all of a sudden they're teaming on Raw.
I've got my notebook open, and opposite the page that all these notes are on are my pages from last week's NXT 8 years back. The one person who was on both episodes is Dana Brooke. She did a stage interview with Bevan Taylor. That's how long ago 8 years was.
Wow.
Folks, because that was, we're really, really near the end of where Devin's there 8 years ago. And she's doing perfectly decent work. I don't know why they fired her, but whatever. I guess that news is not coming, even though we saw her get fired in Breaking Point. That is like breaking ground. That's her big moment, folks. She got fired on TV. Thanks for hiring me so you could do that. On a show that was heavy within ring minutes, 53 minutes and 24 seconds. Part of the reason it got so high is because they gave Dana Brooke versus Cora Jade 10:46. That's 2 seconds longer. 2 seconds longer than the main event 8 years ago, which was Samoa Joe versus Kevin Owens.
Commercial break.
Mm-hmm. A long stretcher job during which the crowd completely turned on Dana. This was a mess. But I will say that the spot where Dana had to look like she got injured, she did that really well.
She did. I give her that.
Her legs looked pretty funny.
Yeah. I had that as a potential issue until, you know, the camera lingered on her. So we're like, okay, well, the camera doesn't linger when they know. And then she gets back into the match, and you don't have to protect Dana by not having her immediately lose. If she's going to get back into the ring after this, she should just get beat. And they have her fight it off, and then the ref has to stop. Dana Brooke gets to lose by referee stoppage?
After a stretcher job? Yep. I've got some issues with this.
That's
and
as much Nicole as
Jade, of all people, who's never submitted anybody else in NXT.
I don't have anything else to say about this one. I only did this one so early because we were already kind of there. Nate, keep it brief.
Yeah,
unless
keep it brief.
Help yourself. Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes I just go. But no, you know, it. As I said, I thought this was a little bit, you know, a little strange. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Dana Brooke coming down, you know, sure, whatever. You don't have anything else for her to do. It's fine. You know, involve her in NXT and, you know, try to elevate, elevate somebody else as much as I guess Dana Brooke could elevate somebody else. I am a fan of Dana Brooke. I like her work and everything like that. But, you know, obviously she's, you know, and even said this, I think Booker T even said this on commentary tonight. You know, she's never really, I forget how he put it, but it was almost like, you know, she's never really made it in WWE. She's always been kind of undercard. She's, I think she might've been a tag champion or something at one point, but she's never really, you know, won any main titles and this, that, the other thing. So I thought this was really strange. So you've got, you know, obviously the knee injury that occurred here, the kayfabe knee injury, which I admittedly thought she pulled off very well. I also was kind of wondering for a couple seconds if it was legit or not, but because of, again, the camera lingering and the way the referee like responded to it, I was like, okay, this is a worked angle, like probably within about 5 seconds of her favoring the knee. And then there was even a spot, it was a few seconds, maybe a minute or so after, you know, the initial knee injury, where she gets up and Dana Brooke's walking across the ring without a limp. She turns around and then starts limping. So it's like, okay, yeah, there's no issue really there. But, you know, then of course we've got the whole stretcher thing where she tries, you know, she's getting wheeled out on a stretcher. Now they don't call the match off or anything like that because the match started up again right shortly thereafter. But, you know, when you have some sort of a stretcher job like that, like you expect that to be like at a blow off to an angle or where, you know, there's some really high stakes in a match. It's, you know, a spot that I guess really shouldn't be taken lightly as a storytelling device. And I feel like they just kind of threw it in there out of the blue. Like, you know, One of the memories that was coming back to me as Dana Brooke was, you know, fighting her way off of the stretcher and kind of making her way back to the ring, you know, was Mick Foley and The Undertaker, Hell in a Cell, when Mick Foley, you know, was getting stretchered away and then started fighting his way back. Now, granted, Undertaker wasn't like there fighting him off the stretcher, but I was remembering that as that particular. That was what was going through my head as Dana Brooke, was kind of fighting her way off the stretcher and back into the match. And I'm like, is that really the visual that you want to portray in this match? I'm sure. I mean, I can't be the only one that thought about it. Maybe between the three of us I was, but I mean, I can't be the only person that thought about, you know, that particular moment or even, you know, another particular, you know, another stretcher type moment within WWE that was, you know, prevalent that, you know, I'm probably not thinking of at the moment. So I can't be the only one. Do you really want to have that be what people are thinking about in this particular match? I just feel like it was a little overkill for what it was. You know, if they did that in, I mean, I don't think I would have liked them to have done that during Rollins versus, Breaker, but I could understand them doing it there, as because it was a big match, you know, high stakes, something like that. You know, of course, she's fighting her way off. One of them would be fighting their way off of the stretcher to try and win the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. What were the stakes here? Why was Dana putting herself in harm's way to just try and beat Cora Jade in essentially what boils down to an exhibition match? So I don't know. There were a lot of things there that just really did not make sense. The match itself was somewhat clunky. I don't know. I don't think this really played off very well or was booked very well. If they give us a great story to go with it, coming out of it, okay, fine. But yeah, I mean, just to have Cora Jade wind up tapping out or not even tapping out Dana Brooke ends up, you know, she ends up, the referee stopped the match from brutality. It just all seemed like way too much, way overbooked for Dana Brooke versus Cora Jade and what boiled down to an exhibition match.
Now, was that brief? I mean, I guess we can quibble.
I mean, look, when I started talking, it was 10:47, and now it's 10:50. So, I mean, 3 minutes.
It felt like much longer than that.
I mean,
much like the match. No. It's just, I will say this. They tried something. And there were two matches where they really tried a different storytelling device, and we will do the other one next. On these ladies, Bruce.
Yeah, so to keep it brief, I'll say that Dana Brooke, definitely her and Lacey Evans, and I've said this before, were the two women who were moved from NXT way too quickly. I understand what they're trying to do here, make Dana Brooke seem like a legitimate threat on NXT when she hasn't been on Raw or SmackDown, except for when she thought she won the Money in the Bank match during the pandemic, I guess. And then you're trying to make sure that Corey Jade gets some kind of killer edge or killer instinct to her by having her submit Dana Brooke, or I guess have the referee stop it because of how much she's wrenching on her knee. But again, Cora Jade, as far as I can remember, has not submitted anybody in NXT. So if all of a sudden for her to be able to bust this out and make it be her new finisher to a certain extent, looking at it and how they put this, it doesn't really go over too well with me. I will say, though, from what I expected, this match was better than I thought it would be. But again, much too long for what they tried to do in terms of the stretcher job and the injury angle.
What I wrote at the end of this was...
Was that an example of brief?
It was.
Okay, I'm just checking.
What I wrote at the end of this was, if you went into this match knowing that one of them was helping out the other, showing them the ropes and kind of teaching them wrestling, I don't know that you'd get it right. I want to like Dana. I really do. 8 years ago, we're at the beginning of her time on 8 years back, and it is absolutely as bad as I remember. I remember thinking this is way too hard of a push for somebody whose talent is this. I did not feel that way to that level again until Nikita Lyons. Like, those are the only two times I have felt that strongly. Like, I cannot believe they think this person is worthy of a push of this level.
Carmella doesn't fit in there somewhere. I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah.
Carmella actually has character development and talent there.
I know. I'm just poking fun at Kelly mostly.
I've never liked Carmella. And I make that pretty clear on some of the shows, but made my peace with her in her role now. That's fine. She got there.
Chelsea Green.
Stop. You just don't. Let's not. We don't have to talk about her. I'm not going to. Okay. Our opener was Wesley versus Tyler Bate. Your special referee, Mustafa Ali. You know, when a referee does such a good job, you don't even notice they're there. They really, really went for something here with Ali. And it's weird. And I loved it. This was by far my favorite match on the show. I mean, by far. And they had Ali doing fast counts, having doing slow counts. And both of them to both guys. Like, he didn't favor one more than the other. He was just messing with them. And the question is he trying to bring something out of them? Is he trying to turn them against each other further? Is he just a disturber of shiz? I don't know. Maybe he is. But there's got to be more to it. And he looked like he was just having so much fun doing it. There was joy on the face of Mustafa Ali as he was messing with these two guys. And he's holding both their arms up afterwards, like he's really done something. And they're looking at him like, what? Who the hell are you? Like, what is going on? And that is a gift that we'll keep on giving. I'm really interested to see where this goes. Loved the finish with Wesley coming into the ring to give the cardiac kick to Mustafa Ali. But Ali pushes himself out of the way. And Bate eats it instead. I thought the timing on that was really, really well done. So they could do it with the device, but not have it be so obvious that there isn't room for interpretation by the characters in question. Lee and Bate can just kind of do no wrong at this point. And Ali, I feel, has been criminally underutilized. They've gone halfway with him a few times, but I just think he's great. And I can't wait to see where this opener is going. Exactly 13 minutes is what I clocked this one in at. And a real, real good opener, Bruce.
Yeah. When Mustafa Ali made his appearance, we discussed what he would bring to NXT. And I said, one thing that he has shown, regardless of how bad his role has been, is that he can develop and sustain a character. And we saw that a lot tonight. I've been talking the last few weeks about how he's been sneakily using language to really get under the skin, to not get under the skin of the two, but play mind games with the two to the point that they just willingly took a one-on-one match against each other with him as the guest referee that he brought forward as a proposition and not those two. And we see, as you said, the beautiful mind games he played by doing fast counts to both, doing slow counts to both. And let's not forget to mention, he pulled double duty here. He wasn't just a referee. He was a personal trainer. He slapped them in the face. Oh, this is a fight. Get into it. You're the North American champion. This is for the North American championship. And then sneakily moved out of the way so that Tyler Bate could get hit with the cardiac kick. But it was also at the same time that he was trying to give him the pep talk. So you have a little bit of an out there if you're Ali saying, no, I was just trying to help you and I saw him coming and I'm the ref. I got to be there. I got to get out of the way, right? So. And to be fair, the last pin that he counted for the victory, it was a regular count. There was no fast count, no slow count. As you said, he just looked like he was having fun. It was joyful. I really loved what Mustafa Ali did out there. Just amazing bits of character development and psychology throughout this match. Definitely a lot different from what we see with referees in WWE. And this is more along the lines of what you might see generally with Aubrey Edwards in AEW, but she's a ref and not a contracted wrestler. And I thought it was also funny how in the beginning of the match when Ali was doing those different counts, how Booker T said, oh, he's not a trained ref. He's not going to be able to – he doesn't know how to do this yet, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, damn, look at Book trying to storyline this into a kind of a plausible situation. Fantastic, lots of good action. These two know each other very well. And the little added bits of Mustafa Ali just doing what he did and the little smiles he was giving them and everything, I thought this was a fantastic. This is, I think, the epitome of what you can get if you want to have sports entertainment and you also want to have sort of the Ring of Honor, AEW type of action. They kind of hit the nice melding of both right here in this match.
Opener, Nate.
Yeah, so I share a lot of what you guys are talking about. This was probably also my favorite match of the night. Wesley and Tyler Bate, incredible competitors. So you knew they were going to have just an absolute banger going into the match anyway. But all of the added stuff with Mustafa Ali, I thought was fantastic. Like Kelly said, he had this joy on his face kind of in the match, and it definitely came through. He's doing these fast counts, the slow counts, and then as Bruce just pointed out, kind of getting in everybody's face, being that personal trainer type of deal, like this, come on, let's go, rather than actually counting Wesley out, or counting the double count for that matter. I thought it was very, very well executed. I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes because everything Mustafa Ali was doing, it just kind of, it almost was like you don't know where he's necessarily going with this. Where he was doing kind of nefarious things, I guess, to both competitors. It's not like he was solely in the camp of Wesley or solely in the camp of Tyler Bate. It was kind of like, as Kelly said, I think to start this segment, he was just stirring up some shiz. And that's really kind of how it came off to me here. At the very end when he's holding up both Tyler Bate and Mustafa Ali's hands, the look on both of their faces, when he was holding up Wesley and Tyler Bate's hands, the look on both Bate and Lee, their face was kind of like, what are you doing? What is going on right now? So this kind of makes me think we're going to get a triple threat for the North American title between these three men. I think 2 weeks ago I was talking about potentially seeing a triple threat between these three before the North American title. I was talking about for the next title defense, which would have been tonight. So where obviously that wasn't the case, but Mustafa Ali was still involved in the match. I think we'll wind up seeing a triple threat match where Tyler Bates able to claim that he didn't get a fair shot at winning the title because of Mustafa Ali's, you know, refereeing ability or what have you, however he decides he words it. I feel like Wes Lee will wind up granting that rematch because he's Wes Lee and he's a nice guy. And I feel like Mustafa Ali will wind up, in the match as well, whether he weasels his way into it somehow or Wes Lee is like, you know what? No, fine. Let's do it. Let's do this. Let's go, me and you. And yeah, then of course it turns into a triple threat with Tyler Bate. That's kind of the way I'm thinking this is going to wind up going. I think I would rather wind up seeing a one-on-one between Mustafa Ali and Wes Lee, but because, you know, as I've stated a million times the show, I'm not a huge fan of like triple threat matches, but a triple threat match between Tyler Bate, Mustafa Ali, and Wes Lee, I don't know. I think I might be on board with that.
Sorry, my daughter just started talking to me in the middle of my podcast. I will pretend I don't see her looking through the laundry right in front of me. Okay, let's talk triple threat tag, Inoue and Blade versus Briggs and Jensen versus Hank and Tank. The upside, Hank and Tank haven't been really matriculated into this group yet, so there's something fresh here. Downside, this was everything that I dislike about triple threats and everything I dislike about triple threat tags even more so. Very frenetic, impossible to type fast enough. I type 81 words a minute, and there's still no point in me trying to recap this because by the time I'm done typing up a spot, they're three spots deep, and all of those spots were done by different teams. So I can't even – you can't cover it. It's an impossible match to cover. You can always tell a better one if I was able to keep up with it and write a lot of spots, then the match has some kind of flow. It has some kind of story going on. It has momentum that isn't constantly changing. So none of the specific spots were bad. None of the work was bad. I like what everybody brought to the ring in their featured roles. They all got their stuff in. Probably every move that all of them know happened because we had so many moves done in 9 minutes and 11 seconds. But we got it. And in the end, like Inoue and Blade, their faces, I think Inoue is kind of starting to straddle the line doing the rich boy thing. But they're no. Like, did they earn it? Did they? It was so quick. So of the matches next week, this is the one that I'm least smitten with, partially because Gallus started a thing with – Gallus has a thing with Los Lotharios, obviously. They also have a thing with
– Stax.
With Stax, because we have – you know, we haven't seen an abduction in NXT in well over a month.
It was time.
So it was time. So Stax, I think it's hilarious that Stax, who was the very low man on previously a large group, and a small dude, I love that he abducted Joe Coffey, who's so much bigger a brute than he is. Like if he tried to abduct him, Joe would just laugh him off and just stand there and wait for Stax to tire himself out, but whatever. Visuals aside, something's going on with that story, and it could be fun. We got this. Gallus was, you know, they were in other scenes, but they had nothing to do with Inoue and Blade. We do know, however, that a match between Gallus and Inoue and Blade will probably be pretty good, and it feels fresh.
This was probably my least favorite match. Well, actually, I take that back. It was one of my least favorite matches of the night. As I just said, I'm not a huge fan of triple threat matches, and this is a prime example of why, especially tag matches. There's so many bodies in the ring doing so many different things all at once, generally, that, you know, not only is it hard for, to cover if, you know, you are writing a report for it, but it's also hard to keep up with just watching it. At least me, I lose who the legal man is and you know, so it's kind of hard to follow it sometimes. It almost just seems like they're moving from spot to spot to spot to spot, and they're not necessarily selling and allowing, each spot to mean something. I think that's, Kelly said they got in every move that they know, and that's probably accurate, or at least to some extent, if not every move, most of them. Going into the match, I had a feeling we would wind up seeing Inoue and Blade come out on top. I wrote that in the hits and misses as well. It almost just kind of felt like it was their time. When you looked at the three teams in the match, I could make a case for Brooks and Jensen because they're the kind of the established. Well, not that Inoue and Blade weren't necessarily established as a tag team, but they're. Brooks and Jensen have been, they've been in the main event. They have had main event matches, I believe, on NXT TV, and they've been a much more pushed tag team. That's what I was looking for. You kind of make the case for them to win, but I felt like that would just be everybody would expect that because they're kind of the more pushed team and whatnot. Hank and Tank, I could also kind of make a very small case for them to win just simply because nobody would expect it. So, it would kind of be unexpected and then, they'd be able to tell a story with Gallus, two newcomer brutes up against the brutish of brute tag team in probably WWE anyway. There was a little story that they could tell there if Hank and Tank won. But for me, it seemed like it was Inoue and Blade's time. They have come such a long way from being just, essentially jobbers in their original singles run, when they first debuted. And even when they first started tagging, they weren't necessarily, they were entertaining, but they weren't necessarily winning matches all the time or lighting up the audience or anything like that. But they've really come into their own over the past, a year, year and a half or whatever, however long it's been since they've been together. So it kind of almost reminded me of Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter, where they were thrown together, similar to a Inoue and Blade, kind of thrown together, but they really worked at it, and they wound up being eventually NXT Tag Team Champions. So that was kind of my thought process coming into this. I don't necessarily like the way that they won. As Kelly said, did they really earn that? But whatever, they still won. Again, like Kelly said too, there's so many different storylines that Gallus is involved in. It almost feels like, did you need to make a number one contender? You couldn't have had, Tony D break out of jail or something. I'm kind of curious to see where this goes, just simply because there's so many different directions that it could go. I just want to know where they're going with it. Overall, like I said, it was not one of my favorite matches of the night by a long shot. Bruce?
Yeah, I think to your point, Kelly, it just felt like a match where it was spot, 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 and everyone got to get their spots, and we got to make sure everyone got to get their spots. And, I didn't see the commercial break, but the first half of the match I did not like. The second half of the match, a little better, but my big thing with triple threat tag matches is if there are no rules, again, everyone should just be in there anyway. But I just, two things stood out to me. Well, three things stood out to me in this match. The first thing is that from his debut, Hank Walker's body is completely transformed. He's much slimmer now. He looks more like an amateur wrestler than he did a lineman from his debut. So kudos to him. Two, Blade's transformation that we saw last week to the end, he's continued. It really makes him look, how do I put this? He just seems that much more believable as an in-ring wrestler. Not to say you have to be big or he can't be scrawny, but I think because of his style, it just didn't seem to work well with his smaller body. And now that he's added some more muscle, it seems like there's more believability to me when he's doing his offense and everything like that. And then three, Nate said Brooks and Jensen a couple of times, and I couldn't help but laugh. So there you go.
It's been a while. It's been a while. So there we go.
And I didn't say it, and it's been a while since I didn't. Yeah, I didn't even accidentally type it anytime. So that was good too. Yeah, Malik Blade, like we really, really put him over on this show when he figured out the art of the hot tag. But now he's out there looking a man. So, yeah, and you know, he's a young man. It's getting easier for him to put on muscle now as he doesn't have the crazy metabolism of a young boy. So there really could be something here. I'm very interested to see how they decide to present those two guys on the main roster, because it doesn't seem like it's soon, even though they've been there for a while and they've had some banger matches. But it still seems like they're far away. But when something clicks, it'll click. There was one other match on this. We prefaced this with Dragon Lee having a little scene with Yulisa Leon and Valentina Feroce. And Nathan Fraser walks into this scene. He said that his mentor, Seth Rollins, told him that he has to give back to the people who did stuff for him. So he is going to... So essentially a match is made. We know it is. And then they say so as much 20 minutes later when they're running down the really interesting card for next week. Fraser will defend the Heritage Cup against Dragon Lee in what will be a real fun one. And then we got the match Leon and Feroce against Jakara Jackson and Lash Legend. Two pairs of ladies out there looking like teams, looking like they got team gear just in time for on Friday. The NXT Women's Tag Team Championship will be no more because the women's championships are being dissolved into one another. They are being there's only going to be one pair. So, yep. Thanks, ladies, for joining the tag division. But this you got nothing to fight for. Jackson and Legend win this one in 3:21. Seems like neither team's in a great position to lose. One's a new act and one's a returning act, but the new act always gets the Duke, it seems, in these situations. Jackson gets the pin here. After Leon and Feroce take out Oro Mensah, that leaves them open to getting beat. So another step forward for Metaphor. This, you know, I would have rather seen a segment from them this week than a match, but you do have to get them in the ring sometime. Not a perfect match, but these teams are new and returning, so I kind of give it a mulligan. Bruce?
Yeah, so I think the thing I liked most about this match was Noam Dar looking longingly at the table as they made their entrance, because there was the absence of the Heritage Cup that he loved so much. I thought that was hilarious. I liked what I saw from Jakara Jackson in this match. And like you said, matching gear on both teams was very nice. And I thought also what was kind of funny was that Leona Feroce had like the light blue gear and the design, and you look over at Jackson and Legend, they kind of have the same design, and it's kind of pinkish red. So you go with the red blue dichotomy that we always see so much. But again, they look like actual teams, and that is better than a lot of other teams that are put together. So I'm just, as you said, if you want, okay. Neither team is, as you said, at a point to lose. So why not just put together some random team for Jackson and Legend to beat, since Metaphor is clearly the focus right now. But this also might just be a fact that they want to make sure Feroce and Leon are on TV again. Maybe they don't have enough women that they could just throw out there and sacrifice at the time. But at least for Feroce and Leon, They got back out there. They showed everyone what they can do. Early in the match, though, when Leon was outside tending to her knee, I was like, oh, no, did she already hurt her knee again? And you could even see the ref go check on her to make sure that she wasn't legitimately hurt. So
yeah.
I guess a good job of selling for her on that part. But if she is hurt again, then that's just brutal. The knee injuries in NXT, not even just recently, but going back to the days of Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai, who just had another knee injury. I mean, it's rough. So that aside, I think you had the right team go over just because of the focus that they have on the group. And I do think we are seeing improvement from all four women. So that's a step in the right direction.
Let us not talk about bad things happening to Dakota Kai. Let us not do that. But Nate, take it away on the tag team match. Or don't, I guess.
The mute button strikes again. So I don't have a heck of a lot to really add, but you know, compared to what you guys said here, I mean, the only thing that I can really think of in terms of why they would have pit both these teams against one another, especially where they're both really not in a position where they could lose, is because that was something that was going through my head as well. You know, both Feroz and Leon, they're returning. They kind of seem like they want to establish them as, you know, a bit more of a tag team, and they've got, you know, some more TV time. And then obviously you've got Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson as part of Metaphor. So yeah, this kind of new emerging stable. So it was kind of like, yeah, you know, why would they do that? The only reason I can think about or that I can think of is that they're going to have them in some sort of a prolonged feud where, you know, they may wind up trading wins. You know, I think Metaphor, if that is the case, I think Metaphor would probably still wind up coming out on top simply because, you know, they are the new, the brand new act, if you will, the new stable, and they're probably trying to get them over. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for Leon and Freuss either, because they're obviously getting TV time. And I think once they move on from that particular feud, then they'll move on to a different feud. And, hopefully with a bit more of like an established presence behind them. The match itself was okay. It wasn't great. I agree. Jakara Jackson definitely stood out to me here in the match. Lash Legend too, to a point. But I was paying attention to Lash Legend a little bit more so than probably the others, simply because, when she first debuted, it was not a stellar debut by any stretch. And, you know, there was a lot of comparisons that we were making to Nikita Lyons at the time, simply because, you know, that, they're kind of similar in their size and their style and what have you. And they were also debuting at about the same time. So it's kind of just paying attention to see, you know, where she's at, because Lash Legend seemed before she, you know, took a little bit of a hiatus. I forget if it was an injury or why she was off TV. I think it was an injury. But before she was gone, she was really starting to get better. We had made note of that quite a few times on the show. I feel like she was in a pretty good spot there as well. Feroz and Leon, I always like what they do. Especially together as a team, they seem to be a pretty, I don't say well-oiled team, but they definitely work together. I think their in-ring work has certainly improved. So, I think I've already talked longer than I expected to about this, so I'm going to shut up.
Everyone else expected it, though. So there is that.
Brief.
Okay. Many segments on this show. I will roll the two biggest ones together, and we'll talk about those. And the rest will be, what do you remember about the show?
Have your report.
What's that? I do. I have all these things written down, but when we get there, yeah, I'll tell you. So the two big ones were Chase U. They had a big presence here. Duke Hudson introducing Thea Hale as the woman of the hour, the winner of the battle royal, and Thea getting real pumped. Here's the thing. This scene, like, there are so many times in NXT this wouldn't have existed. They would have just thrown this match out there cold. knowing that we know that Tiffany's going to win and everything like that. But it's not just wrestling you have to learn in NXT. It's not just backstage segments you have to learn. You've got to be able to promote a big-time match. And somebody like Thea Hale at 19, they don't have to do this early. But I love that they are giving this chance. Like, that's why somebody like Lyra Valkyria is in that match against Tiffany Stratton in the first place and not Roxanne Perez again. Got to give everyone these reps. They've got to give everybody these attempts. And I just love that this match was given this. And Thea's excitement is working for her. And it continues to be over-excitement, but it's less overacting by the day. Like, she feels like her excitement, her enthusiasm feels a little more organic all the time. It's huge. It's silly, but it feels a little more real to me all the time. And Duke, in his smarmy role within a beloved faction, I still love that too. A great segment that didn't have to be, but was. And of course, Tiffany does her part. And then the other one, Carmelo Hayes and Baron Corbin. We got real, real close to Carmelo Hayes just completely eating Baron Corbin alive. But they gave Corbin the last word, which you've got to do. This is going to work, because if Melo gets the last word, they're just going to laugh Corbin off the stage. So Corbin gets the last word, and he puts it in the context of, I'm a man. I have man things. I'm a rich man. And this is just going to be another accomplishment for me. So the lines were there, even if he can't hang with Hayes from a charismatic standpoint. It still kind of surprises me sometimes that Baron Corbin found a lane that worked so well for him, because for a long time I just thought it wasn't there. But I think the segment worked mostly because of Melo, but I thought that Corbin is so good at giving you what you need from him. If you need 10 yards for a first down, he can get you 5. If you need 3 yards, he can also get you 5. That's Baron Corbin. So,
yeah, Bruce, he still somehow got cut from the Cardinals.
Oh, gosh.
He was a
line, I forgot.
Not a running back.
You know, I did the football thing without remembering that there was a great line about getting cut from the Cardinals. I think I threw it to Bruce.
Yeah. On the Melo and Corbin segment, so definitely some good one-liners from both men. Hayes definitely with the at 26. You were getting cut from the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, that was a good line, but Corbin came back, as you said, and you know, Happy Corbin got me however much he said his house costs. And then all these things that he has because of that character of Happy Corbin, you know, that's the case. Good for him. But as you said, exactly what you needed here to, I guess, build more anticipation to their match next week. I'm surprised Trick didn't get some more shots, didn't get his own shots in there. He usually has a mic with him too, so that was a bit of a miss to me, just because I wanted to hear what he had to say about Corbin. And then the Chase U segment. So last week, Tanny and I discussed Thea Hale and sort of not just her pacing, but the amount of energy she puts into everything that before a match, and then how much energy she must be spending during and after a match. And it's just, it feels like a pace that isn't sustainable. And maybe this character isn't supposed to last too long, but we'll see how it goes. And we have to remember, as they reminded us tonight, she graduated high school a year ago, and then it was immediately in NXT. So that's, I guess she's come a long way in 1 year, considering I don't believe she had any training before this. Stratton was great, of course, and I don't think anyone is going to place a bet that Thea Hale is going to win. But again, I'm interested to see exactly the development of Hale, because she looked pretty good in her last few matches, but this is going to be a different type of match, a different sort of responsibility.
Yeah, I don't think she's gone more than like 6.5 minutes, and this will get longer than that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we've seen with Stratton that, she can, to a good extent, carry some people in the ring. But Thea Hale, she's still pretty green. But I think the fact that they're putting her in this position leads me to believe that they're confident enough in both women that they don't think it's going to be a debacle. And the other interesting thing about that match is, I'm assuming with Hayes and Corbin that this will be the opener for next week. And if it's not the opener, it'll be the top of the hour crossover. But, Strand's going to retain. And then the big, big, big issue they still haven't resolved here is, what's going to happen when Andre Chase returns? And does he make his return next week? I think that is something we need to think about and be on the lookout for, because they keep alluding to him, and yet we haven't seen or even heard from him yet. And he's been written off, I think, since before Battleground, whatever the PLE was before that. So it's been a while, and I'm just wondering what the eventual outcome is going to be here.
With the acknowledgement that it could go the other way, I'm going to call the Heritage Cup match as the opener. And the women as the mid-show main event. But they could easily do it either way. And we'll have my buy-in. Nate?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I personally think we'll see Mello and Corbin in the main event. And then, those other two matches could be interchangeable. And I think it would be fine either way. So I'll start with the Chase U segment. So I have probably less to say about that you guys haven't already talked about. I think Thea Hale has come a long, long way from, her original debut. Being 18 years old and debuting is, I can remember being 18 years old and I barely knew what I wanted to do with my life, let alone, be on national TV, be a character on national TV. I think she's done a very good job with, the limited time that she's had in NXT. She did have a little bit of wrestling experience. I forget what the heck the name was that she wrestled. But she did have a couple AW Dark matches, if I'm not mistaken, before going to NXT. But still, her, she was very, very, very green before she got there. And even to this day, she's still a little green. But I mean, her in-ring has certainly improved in the little bit that we have seen of it. They've definitely protected her, kind of as they've done with like Ava, for example. Where we haven't really seen her in. I think we've only seen Thea Hale maybe in like one or two singles matches. It's primarily been like mixed tags or things like that. Otherwise. So I am very interested to see how she handles herself against Tiffany Stratton. I've talked about before, I went to an NXT Battleground. So I watched the match between Valkyria and Stratton live and seeing, just being able to see that, and kind of seeing how Tiffany Stratton winds, presented herself and how good she actually is in the ring up, seeing that up close. I am curious to see where this match goes. I think Stratton would be able to carry her through a good match for sure. But obviously Thea Hale is going to need to be able to, kind of hold up her end of the bargain, her end of the match as well. I'm hopeful and I'm kind of confident that she'll be able to pull it off, but there's certainly some question around it there. Definitely looking forward to it nonetheless. As far as Mello and Corbin goes, I thought this was a fantastic segment. I have a bit of a different opinion in terms of like Corbin and his, I think Carmelo Hayes certainly ran circles around him in terms of, the stuff on the mic, but I kind of got this feeling that like Corbin's just kind of brushing it off. I'm too cool for this. Like I'm better than this. I've got bigger things going on in my life than this pissant NXT, And which also, you know, kind of like, I mean, why are you here then if that's the case? But still, you know, it was almost like, at least the way I perceived it, it was like he was kind of trying to brush off everything that Carmelo said and make it like, you know, that it was really not a big deal. Even just, you know, when Carmelo, like, I think it might have been the last line of the promo of the segment where Carmelo started to say something and then, you know, Corbin puts his hand up in front of his face, in front of Melo's face and, you know, basically just shushes him. I thought that was kind of indicative of that as well. Like, you know, just shut up. What you're saying doesn't matter because I'm better and that's it. You know, and my accolades speak for themselves. You know, I'm not a major Baron Corbin fan. Considering my dog's name is Corbin, you'd think I might be, but I'm not. But as Kelly said, he is like he's great when you need him to be great. You know, he's able to come in and be that relatively safe worker that anybody can really work with, and he's going to deliver a good match. You know, one way or another. Is there a chance in hell I think he's going to beat Carmelo? I'm going to give it a very small percentage, and the only reason I'm saying that is I didn't think Dolph Ziggler would wind up winning the title off of Bron Breakker, and it happened. You know, I think because that happened, there's probably less of a chance that they basically, you know, reinvent that angle and go to it again to, you know, to make Carmelo Hayes a two-time champion, if you will. You know, and just give Baron a token run so you could say that Melo is now a two-time champion. I don't think that's necessarily where they're going to go, but I'd give it a very small percentage that it does happen. I am looking forward to the match. You know, like I said, Corbin's not my favorite wrestler by any stretch, but yeah, I feel like he's he gets into his character. And he's able to deliver, you know, he's able to deliver a solid match with pretty much whoever he's in the ring with. And considering he's going to be in the ring against Carmelo Hayes, I think they're going to be able to pull off a pretty good match. I would say pretty great match. And something that is going to, hopefully elevate Carmelo Hayes a little bit more. You know, by having that rub up against the main roster talent, yeah, than he already is. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And I think it's funny that Baron Corbin has surfed so close to the top of every brand and has never been the champion of any brand.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's what he's for. I mean, that's literally what he's for. All right, let's talk segments. You know, you watch pro wrestling to be educated. And this week, everybody learned the word trigonocephaly. So there you go. Gigi Dolin has got a thing going on with Kiana James. Gigi likes street art, and Kiana James likes real estate. They're, you know, they can't coexist, folks. That's what wrestling's about. JC Jane also has a budding feud with Lyra Valkyria, as shown to us by NXT Anonymous. So Gigi and JC not feuding with each other right now only help them both, especially Gigi. And Roxanne and Blair Davenport, they got a thing going on as well. Schism, they're arguing. And the Creeds made fun of them for it, but then they made fun of each other also, along with Ivy. There was some wording there that suggests that the Creeds could be retiring the Dyad, assuming the Dyad are still headed out. But, you know, considering they're on the way out, giving them FaceTime and lines and having James Drake go out there and do some talking, and he's gotten pretty good at it for a guy who wasn't allowed to talk for like a year in Grizzled Young Veterans over in NXT UK. So we got that. Eddie Thorpe is going to face Damon Kemp in Raw Underground, who had that on the bingo card.
Oh, God.
And Gable Stevenson offered his services as a coach to Eddie Thorpe. So how's that going to end, folks? I'm sure none of us can guess. Seth Rollins did a pure fan service scene with Nathan Fraser, and then Trick and Mello put them all over huge while remaining himself. Fun stuff, even if not like not critical, but the stuff that people want to see when somebody visits like this. And yeah, I think those are all of them. And we've got Great American Bash to look forward to. I'm going to say look forward to, because I'm feeling good with the way everything's been so well promoted this week on July 30th. So you don't have to mention everything. Just mention what you remember, Nate.
All right. So I'm going to start with, I guess I'm going to start with the Von Wagner segment, because I have been, we all have been clamoring for some development with Von Wagner for a very long time. And, you know, over the past handful of weeks with, you know, this picture that they've been showing of him as a baby with, you know, scars all over his head, I could not even begin to try and pronounce what that T word was that you said we all learned earlier, which was the, you know, the condition that he was born with. But I actually liked this segment. Now, I think was a little bit, you know, I think Bruce used the term in our Twitter chat, you know, melodramatic. And sure, it definitely was. But I think it kind of needed to be to get across what they're trying to get across. You know, this was a serious life-threatening and presumably real condition. I mean, they look like they're photos of him. I don't think that, you know, they would be you're bringing this up necessarily if this wasn't actually something he went through in real life.
It's so specific. I cannot imagine it being storyline.
Yeah, I can't imagine it being a made up storyline. So I mean, I feel like this is all legit, and this is all something that legitimately did happen to Cal Bloom in real life. So I kind of like the fact that they're blurring, you know, they're blurring lines between kayfabe and reality here by presenting this story. It also starts to explain, you know, some of Von Wagner's behavior, you know, and why he's so angry, and gives him a bit of a backstory. So I am all about character development, backstories. You know, I mean, as absolutely asinine as the Kane and Undertaker backstory is, right? It's one of my favorite backstories in wrestling, because it's just, they gave you so much. And there was just so much to play off of it. Now, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous and crazy and stupid and soap opery, but at the same time, like, there was so much to sink your teeth into, you know, when they were telling that story. Now, I'm not saying that this particular story with Von Wagner is going to get to that, you know, level of, you know, that caliber, if you will, but the simple fact that they are giving him that backstory, they're pulling from real life, so he can actually draw from real life emotions and things like that. I'd like that. You know, Von Wagner, Cal Bloom, he is not the greatest actor in the world. That was very apparent here tonight during the segment, but I think this is probably some of the best acting he's done in NXT. Maybe not the best, but I think it ranks up there. So I definitely need to give him some credit for this, and not just him, but I mean NXT in general for kind of giving us the story. You know, it's intriguing. It's definitely intriguing, and I'm really curious to see where this goes. And it also makes me feel really bad for calling him Mick Eyebrows for so long, making fun of you know, actual medical conditions. So,
dude,
you know,
I have taken shots at the way his skull looks before, and I can't tell you. Like, I'm not a person who feels bad about things he's done, but after they said the things that were going on with his skull as a child, I
immediately felt like an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, a formal apology to Cal Bloom there. Cause, you know, I just thought you had a weird shaped head. I didn't realize you actually went through, you know, a life threatening traumatic experience, you know, so at such a young age. So, I take back all the Mick Eyebrows comments and things I've made over the years. Cause that definitely did not make me feel too good. So, but yeah, so, you know, like I said, I actually really enjoyed the segment. The other segment I'm going to comment on is the Thorpe Kemp segment. You have Raw Underground bringing Gable Stevenson in. When was the last time we saw Gable Stevenson? I can't even tell you.
Never, because his name is Stevenson.
It's whatever. Whatever it is.
Stevenson. Nope. Oh, he's one of the most scary people in the world. You can't whatever his name.
Okay, fine. Fine. But still, when was the last time we actually saw him? Right? So I was kind of surprised to see him, period.
The crowd of the PLE.
Yeah, actually, now that you say, I think you're right. I think you're right. Still, it's been a while since he's been involved in any sort of like storyline or anything like that. And I know, you know, he was having, they weren't super like impressed with his progress or anything like that. And that's kind of why. I think it's a neck injury. Oh, was it? Okay. I do remember reading something about that, you know, them not being like as impressed as they thought they would be. Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Cool. I was just making sure I'm not crazy. I know I'm sort of crazy, but just making sure I'm not completely crazy. So I thought that was kind of a cool touch, you know, bring in Damon Kemp's brother and, you know, you'd be like, hey, yeah, you know, nobody knows him better than me. I wish they would have maybe said why, unless they don't necessarily want to establish the fact that they're related, in which case, why put them in a angle together where, you know, you're kind of implying that, but you're not necessarily saying that, which I thought was a little bit weird. The Raw Underground thing, I'm intrigued by simply because I'm curious to see how they wind up pulling this off. But I mean, Raw Underground was an interesting idea, and I give them credit for trying something different. But I mean, it bombed from the get-go. I mean, I remember watching that first episode of Raw that actually featured Raw Underground, and I'm just like, what the hell is this? Like, it didn't feel like a wrestling product, or at least something that should be on Monday Night Raw. If it was going to be anything, you know, throw it on as like a, you know, a Saturday, you know, like some sort of a syndicated Saturday show where you've got your wrestlers, like, you know, doing some underground wrestling in a ring with no ropes and stuff like that, but whatever. I give them credit for at least trying something different. So I'm curious, I'm wondering why they're bringing it back in the first place, because who asked for that? I'm going into it a little bit. I'm trying to be optimistic about it, that it's not going to just suck.
I think it's purely a storyline device to get Gable Stevenson over.
I didn't really think about that, but that could certainly be. So yeah, so we'll see. We'll see where that goes.
All right. Earlier I said that the only person that was on this show and the 8 years back that I just did was Dana Brooke. That's a lie. Finn Balor is on both of them as well. You could have slept without knowing that. I could not have. So there you go.
Hey, we appreciate the honesty.
Thank you. Bruce, on the many segments.
Yeah, I'll hit the Thorpe Kemp one since we're already there, since you two forgot to mention the biggest development out of this whole thing, and that's Eddie Thorpe is the DJ. So, moving off.
Yeah, that's weird.
They're showing different parts.
Love the fact that they showed him doing DJ stuff and didn't add audio to the scene.
Hey, he had the headphones on, so maybe it was all
he
in his head.
So yeah, that's true, but normally, like, if you see that on a movie, they're adding audio to the scene.
Or if you just think DJ Zima Ion when he was in Impact, the Walking Wild. So, yeah. I really liked Eddie Thorpe's presentation. As I told Katani last week, I'm just waiting for them to pull the limiters off of him once he learns a bit more WWE style, because he can really go, and I'm going to be happy with that. I think this feud with Kemp is a good feud because this has transitioned well to WWE style. He's really adept at doing what I always advocate for heels with amateur wrestling backgrounds, and that is to use your amateur wrestling and add some grittiness to it, some things like rubbing the forearm against the face after taking him down, things that Kirk Angle and Kurt Angle used to do when he was sort of in this ECW heel days when he went to Impact. And I think that's a good way for Thorpe, who's used to a more snug style in Japan, to both transition and still find some familiarity and comfortability within his wrestling now that he is in NXT. Dolan and James and Valkyria and Jane, I like that they've kept Dolan and Jane apart while still kind of being on the periphery, but then finding feasible new opponents for them and building toward them without just some sort of quick hotshot thing. So the Valkyria-Jane thing was set up last week when Valkyria complained about, or Jane complained about Valkyria being in the Battle Royal and she wasn't in it and talking smack about her. And then I think during the Battle Royal is when Kiana James and Gigi Dolan had some more interactions and really cemented them as the next few. So I think in that regard, they're doing a good job. And one thing that NXT always does is they have one, two, sometimes three storylines for people that are outside of the title picture, regardless of whichever title you're discussing. And with Raw, SmackDown, AEW, sometimes you don't see that within divisions. So apart from, you know, like the men's top championship, you really don't see it too often or as often enough. And I think NXT does a good job of that, of having different feuds away from the title for other people to get on TV and then to build them up. The Diamond Mine segment I thought was, you know, it was probably the most personable segment I've seen with Diamond Mine. They were just giving each other crap and laughing and having fun. And most of us do that with our friends. So for the first time, I felt like they were more relatable than just the Uber athletes who, you know, are there, I guess. And so we're getting more layers, again, with what we see here from acts not just associated with the title picture. Avoid the NXT parking lot at all costs. Never visit. Even if you go in to watch NXT, do not go through the NXT parking lot, because tonight Stacks abducted Gacy, as Kelly alluded to earlier. And I just thought it was kind of funny because they're leaving and someone's honking the whole time, because I guess Gallus just parked their SUV right in the middle of the parking lot in the sort of entryway or whatever. And then Coffee, too many Joes on the show. Coffee just happens to get a phone call at that exact moment. And I wonder, something about rats in the bar. And maybe that was Stacks calling him. They didn't really make it clear, because I don't know Stacks, when he got out of the car, if he had a phone or not. But this whole stuff.
Bluetooth in the car.
True. It could have been. But again, I hope that next week we get a little bit about. I still think Stacks is the rat. Or it is the snitch who, because of the timing of his phone call and D'Angelo getting arrested, but we'll see how this goes. And the Wagner Stone thing, yes, good job by both of them. I do think that they really hammed it up with the dramatics. I understand it's a serious situation, but some of the acting I felt was just a little over the top. But I guess it's only taken them, 6 years to get Von Wagner some development, some things that make us be like, oh, he's something more than just a big guy who yells and is boring in the ring. So good on them there. And I will say, going back to what you said to start the show, a lot of good hype, a lot of good build for next week, even for matches that were only finalized tonight, like Fraser versus Dragon Lee. We got a nice segment with them to set that all up. So really good building blocks with NXT. And I think they just show this every week. They make sure you understand what are the big ones, the big matches or segments coming up next week that you need to know to keep you invested. And the last thing I'll say is when we talked last week with Tanny and Rollins being on the show, for me, it wasn't so much of, is this show going to pop a rating? To me, is did they show enough on this show to keep some of those viewers who are only coming over to watch the Seth Rollins Braun Breaker match? Because I think that'll be the bigger barometer of if tonight was a success or not.
Yes, indeed. I'm interested. I don't follow ratings. I just don't. But with a week like this, they basically are begging you to do so. Like, if I'm ever going to take a look, this is the week, and so are the ones following. So, yeah, you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. That's what Kevin Catani did. Bruce has been talking to him on this show, and I just talked to him on Wrestling Night in America. We had a great night on Sunday talking all the things that happened in the previous week. Fun to talk with Kevin, and we had a great show there. So he emails us thusly. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you all well. Woo, what a gold rush night one, eh? I thought the 2 second-hour women's matches were a bit clunky, but the main event and Corbin Mello segment were great. Furthermore, I think the Fraser-Dragon Lee match should be really good. That said, the damn NXT parking lot strikes again, eh? When will they learn? Insert Jim Halpert face. My questions are more macro today. As we hit the summer stride, where do you all sit with storyline set development thus far? Any particular wrestler who is exceeding expectations, and who do you think is underperforming? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Yeah, do listen to 8 years back. It's been fun stuff lately, and Tom and I are descending into madness during some weird times for that show. And us going mad, it's good stuff. So there's that. Who is exceeding expectations? I'm going to give you two names. They are Wesley and Axiom. There are a number of people that I think are doing good work on this show, but Wesley was never supposed to be in this position. He was never supposed to be pushed as a singles star, as somebody who was having North American Championship matches at this level with this many people for this long. This was not the plan. And he was not supposed to be a guy who could go out there and have serious mic time. And that's what he's doing. And the weed jokes are almost completely in the rearview mirror. Now, we don't know if they're going to fall back on that on the main roster, but we now know they don't have to, because it is unbelievable that he is this good, that even with his diminutive size in comparison to so many on the roster, that his work continues to be so good and so dedicated and so strong. He could always do spots, and now he's chaining wrestling together so much better. I love what he's done. Wesley is literally what he is doing is the reason I watch NXT. Forgive me for being a little maudlin, but his development is literally why I love this show, and I love what he's doing, and I don't know what else to say. Axiom is a smaller version of all the things I just said, because he is still on his way up to where Wesley is. If he's really, really good in a year, he'll be Wesley. He's doing really good stuff, and as Bruce and I talked about on a week where I don't think Nate was here, he's found his charisma without having to use his face to convey it. Really, really good stuff from him. Wanted to list one of the ladies here, but most of them are doing what I would have expected. You know what? Tiffany is exceeding the expectations that I had for her when she first showed up. But she's been so good for long enough that it seems weird to mention her, because she's no secret. And she's not been a secret for a while. I would also mention that I am digging the trajectory of Cora Jade, who has been so up and down, but I think has found the lane she belongs in. Underperforming, you know, I was going to throw out the name Vic and then just be done with it. Vic Joseph. But honestly, the last 2 months, I have kind of thought he was fine. So
there might be some wrestlers that I think are kind of on that level where they're getting less out of them that they want, but I just don't know if I should. So, Bruce just messaged me that he can't hear anything.
I can certainly hear you. So
Nate, if
I'm
you want
to, sorry, my computer tripped out. It seemed like,
okay. So it was on your end. That's good.
Yeah.
If it's on mine, that's not so good because I'm the one recording. Nate, anything on Catani's email?
Yeah, so to start, I'm also kind of having some trouble figuring out who I would consider underperforming. I'm looking up and down the card here, and just about everybody that I'm looking at, I think is performing at least at the level I expected them to, or exceeding expectations. Wesley was obviously, he was the first one that came to my mind when you said exceeding who's exceeding expectations, really for exactly the reasons that you pointed out. So I'm not going to, you know, belabor that and kind of, you know, harp on all of that. I also think that, you know, it is, and I don't know if it's necessarily exceeding expectations, but somebody that I've certainly grown to like to, you know, like to watch week in and week out, and it's Tyler Bate. I think actually he might even be underutilized for what they're doing with him. But, you know, in terms of his, you know, his in-ring ability and, you know, what he's able to bring to the table, like I'm hoping that, you know, they're able to kind of capitalize more on that. So I guess in a way I'm going to kind of say that's not necessarily exceeding expectations, maybe even under, not exceeding expectations, but it's not really on him. I feel like it's kind of the stories that they've been telling with him, though that may change where he's been, you know, in the North American title scene. But I'll leave it at that.
Go ahead, Bruce.
All right. So I'll touch on two that you two brought up just briefly, then I'll hit a couple of, I think, deep cuts. So Stratton, to me, even though I was very high on her from the very beginning, from her opening, from her very first vignettes, I think the rate at which she improved and the point at which she became so comfortable with her character both in and outside the ring makes me think that she has exceeded expectations, because I think for even the most optimistic people, the timeline wasn't this quick. And with Wes Lee, he even brought it up in his promo either last week or the week before. He wasn't supposed to be here because he was never meant to be a singles guy. One of the promos earlier in the year may have been a video, a little vignette. He said that I believe these were his first singles matches in his career, his first singles titles opportunities, and then his first singles title. So the development and the rate at which we've seen Wesley go from being a purely tag team wrestler to the highlights and one of the best singles wrestlers in NXT, I think needs to definitely be commended. Now, to some of the more deep cuts, I think Thea Hale is definitely someone I see as exceeding expectations, especially when she reminded us.
She should have been mine. Yep.
I mean, just thinking about the fact, again, that she reminded us tonight, she graduated high school 1 year ago. She's been doing this for basically a year. And the entire time she's been on TV, it's not like she, you know, was doing stuff at the PC and was doing stuff in the Coconut Loop and then was brought on TV. She was thrown on TV pretty much right away. The whole thing with her and her recruitment was the whole thing to introduce her. So she's really been thrown into the fire from the very beginning. And yes, there have been some hiccups. Yes, there have been some stumbles. But the growing pains have led to her at this point getting a title match next week, which I don't think any of us saw happening for her within basically a year of her debut. So kudos to her on that. Another person I really want to highlight here is Channing Stacks Lorenzo. Man, when they were the family and when they had LDF with them, he was the person Donovan, I couldn't really tell between the two of them, but when they got in the ring, Dax was someone I didn't really see much of. And my goodness, in the last at least 3 months, if not 6 months, maybe all of 2023, he's just really stepped it up. Each match he goes out there, he's looking more and more confident, more comfortable. He is a fantastic seller, especially considering his size. But one thing, and I talked about, I believe, with Nate when you weren't on one of these calls, Kelly, is he has learned and adapted ring psychology very quickly in terms of what he needs to do, where he needs to be, how he needs to sell, which is such a key component of professional wrestling. So there's that. I think he especially, to me, is someone that really just came out of nowhere. And I'm thoroughly pleased at the sort of development I've seen from him. And quickly on the women's division, I think we have to talk about Kiana James and Fallon Henley. Kiana James really stood out during the Iron Survivor Challenge back in December. Fallon Henley has been gradually and steadily improving. And for me, the biggest thing with her isn't the in-ring stuff, because she was fine there to me. Her character, her confidence in character, even when her character was a bit of a slime ball because she was adamant about not trusting her partner and all that, and she ended up being correct. But she's shown a lot more growth and layers when it comes to presenting her character. Kiana James, I feel like with the character they found for her as sort of the CEO, only cared about basically high-end stuff, making money, to a certain extent winning titles because she was a tag team champion not too long ago. And then her development in the ring. She's found a style that fits her character. I like how her move names, like the 401K as her finisher, the little spinning flatliner, also connects to her character in a way that I don't think is too cheesy. Like, oh, my name is Batista and I do a power bomb, so it's the Batista bomb. Like, I think it fits better with what she's doing here. And the only thing is, I don't think we've seen G in a couple of weeks when Kiana James has been on TV. If she was on tonight, I completely missed it.
I did a binge of Tom's last three.
Is she 14?
I think she's gone.
She's gone.
Yeah, a bonus point. Where it's not confirmed, but she's been talking more and more about her home and returning home and stuff like that. I don't think she is there anymore.
She's from Brazil, correct?
If it's not that, we're close. It's a lot of information. Tom really dumps it, and it's great. And I love Bonus Point, but if you don't watch the show, it's a little tougher to remember.
That's a bit of a letdown because I felt like they had a good chemistry between them. But if it's her own decision, her own volition, then good for her. Do what's best for you. I think those are who I would say are standing out and exceeding expectations. And as I said with the storyline development, I mean, NXT just continues to excel in terms of setting people up, setting weeks up in advance, setting PLEs up in advance, but also, again, the crucial thing about any wrestling show is, do you have angles being built outside of the title picture? Because you need to have people or teams built up to then face the champion whenever they do defeat the challenger or there's a new champion. So for me, NXT is hitting, in terms of telling stories, NXT is always, to me, one of the better shows of the week because of their focus and attention to detail. So, I would say heading into the Bash, I have no worries about any of the storylines heading into that show.
So there you go, folks. A busy show leading into what could be a busier show. But on the upside for you, Bruce, you don't have a triple threat tag match to talk about next week. So there is that.
Covered.
Yes. To cover. So talking about it is easy.
Yes.
Typing about them is less so. So, what I was going to say at the beginning of the show, and I forgot, is as a wrestling show, it was up and down. As a wrestling show, it was all up. So I'm excited to see what happens next week. And yeah, I'm feeling good about the product right now. But I was also gone for 3 weeks, so maybe absence made the heart grow fonder. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Nate.
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter, I do the NXT hits and misses, so please check that out on pwtorch.com. I've got one up for Gold Rush tonight. I'll have one up for Gold Rush next week. I have missed a couple weeks, but I'm gonna try to get them up every week from here on in.
Bruce.
My name is Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And we haven't had callers in a while. So if you're listening, you can call in. Joel, if you're listening, I always listen, but you never call in or you never talk to us. Call in, hit one, get on the line, let us know your thoughts. And then that way you hear more than just our opining and you get to hear other people's opining. So, yeah, give us a call next week and talk to us.
Hell yeah,
515-605-9345.
Say it again, Nate.
515-605-9345. I don't think anybody has actually said that this episode. So,
and
yeah,
then
call
hit
us.
One to let us know that you want to get on the line and talk to us about your thoughts on the show.
Yeah, that could have been part of the problem, not mentioning the number. Well, I'm out of practice, folks. But I'm
well,
back.
It's not just tonight. It's not just tonight, Kelly. Not just the 2 weeks that I was recording the shows,
yeah,
but we want to hear you again, people, so please give us a call.
All right, folks, let's fizzle out there. Cheers, and we will see you in 7.
Fizzle, 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 fizzle.
Oh, gosh.